KSA Radio, where you are family. My name is Ethan. I'm chatting to Albert Hammond. So Albert, could you quickly introduce yourself to people who might not be familiar with your work?
Yes. Hi, my name is Albert Hammond. I've been writing songs for the last 55 years. You'll recognize a lot of them, and I'll be there to sing them for you, and songs I've sung myself and songs that I've written for other famous singers. I hope this is a good introduction, and can't wait to see you all.
So we're going to start talking about the famous singers you've written for quite soon. But before we get to that, I want to just take it a little bit back and talk about how you first started with music. Did you come up in a musical family, or what made you decide that music was the career path for you?
I didn't grow up from a musical family, but when I was 8 years old, I was singing solos in church. They made me head choir boy, and I sang, you know, solos. And when the service was over on a Sunday and the congregation gathered outside, people would come over to my mother and father, and I was there holding my mother's hand, and they would say, "Your son sung so beautifully today." And I could see the smiles on my parents' faces, and I thought, this is a nice thing to do for a living, make people happy, you know. So that was my beginning. And the good thing was that I never gave up.
So talk about the early days. How did you get started as like a fledgling songwriter and musician?
Well, okay. When I was about 9 or 10, I found this artist called Buddy Holly that I love. And he was very simple. I mean, if you knew 3 chords, you could play Buddy Holly songs. Anyway, so I knew my father's barber was a flamenco player. So I asked him if he showed me 3 chords, I would come and sweep the hair off the floor of the barber shop every day. And he agreed, you know. So he taught me A, D, and E, the 3 chords. And I was able to start playing Buddy Holly songs and singing them. And that was my beginning. And from there, I just felt I could write songs. So I started to write at probably the age of 13, 14. And that was the beginning for me.
So which writers, songwriters, poets, which of those kinds of people do you think had a strong impact on the way that you write music?
I didn't know much about songwriters because, unfortunately, songwriters were never mentioned unless you looked at the record and you saw a name, you know. But I mean, songwriters like, you know, Goffin King or Lieber and Stoller, or artists that wrote their own songs, you know, like the Johnny Cash or Roy Orbison or Jubilo Bryant, you know, who wrote a lot of stuff for the Everlys. Yeah, I mean, and then I go back to the Johnny Mercers, you know, and people, great lyricists, you know, Bacharach and David. I mean, there were many of them. I just felt I didn't want to be a formula writer, you know. I just felt I loved all kinds of music, so I just wrote what was in my heart. And some days in my heart was, some pop song. Some days it was a country song. Some days a rhythm and blues song. Some days a rock song. And so I wrote, you know, from country to pop to R&B to rock. And that became my signature. You know, I wasn't like a formula writer that only wrote one kind of thing. In a way, it was not really good for my career, because if I would have written 10 songs similar to It Never Rains, I would have had 10 number ones, you know, but I just didn't do that because it wasn't in my heart to do that.
So I want to talk about some of the people you've written for. So KSA Radio, we're obviously a gay radio station, and I realized that some of the people that you've written for are actually quite iconic in the gay community. So I want to talk about, just I want to list some artists that you've written for, and I want you just to talk about your experiences with them, your thoughts about them, just maybe some stories you might have. So let's talk Whitney Houston.
You know, Whitney, I never met. Whitney was, when they asked me to write the song to represent America in the 1988, if I thought of an artist I wanted to sing this song, I thought of Elvis Presley. I thought he would be the iconic artist to represent America singing the theme song in the Olympics. So in my mind was Elvis. Then I sent my demo to Clive Davis, and back came a cassette with this wonderful voice by this wonderful, wonderful singer called Whitney Houston. And I tell you, I played it 10 times and I cried all the way through the 10 times I played it. It was just magnificent and a big surprise to me, because I was thinking of a guy. I was thinking of Elvis and not a woman. And along came a woman that, you know, that just made it even I mean, the best, you know, it was just incredible. Since you're saying that this is a gay radio station, I can tell you that my partner, my old partner, Mike Hazelwood, was gay. I didn't know that for 11 years. We worked together for 11 years. He was always surrounded by beautiful women. And I didn't know it until he came to me in 1974 and said, I can't work with you anymore. And I said, what are you talking about? We just signed a $1 million deal. And he said, I'm sorry, Albert, I've fallen in love with you and I just, you know, I can't do it. And I said, Mike, I'm married. I got two kids. You've known me all this time. And that was the breakup because of that. And I actually wrote a song which was on the B-side of Down by the River called The Last One to Know. And it talks about that. It talks about that I loved him anyways, you know, even though I wasn't like him, you know. So I'm a very open. I'm not a racist in any kind of way, whether it's color or what the person is or anything like that. So, in fact, I remember going to South Africa for the first time. I think it was around 74, and when the people were segregated. And I asked in my concert that the people should mix, you know, the top and the bottom of the theater should be more of a mix, you know, and that split colors like that. And it actually happened, you know, which was wonderful.
Okay, so Tina Turner.
Tina Turner is a wonderful human being. She's a wonderful artist. And it was very easy to produce and to write for her because she was so open to ideas and, you know, to where the song should go. And I was pretty much the same. That's why I can work with so many people because I'm quite open to what's best for the artist and the song and the record, you know, to the point that her musical, I have two songs in it, you know, which is wonderful, you know, for me, the Tina musical. So, yeah, I mean, Tina Turner, one of my favorites.
Awesome. And then finally, Diana Ross.
Diana Ross I worked with way back in 1984, and I was producing 1100 Bel Air Place, which was the first album that Julio Iglesias did in English. I actually produced all his English albums, but the first one, I had some duets. I had the Beach Boys singing with him on The Air That I Breathe. I had Willie Nelson singing on To All the Girls I've Loved Before, which was a huge record. And then there was a song I didn't write, but since I was producing, you know, Diana was going to do the duet with him. And it was amazing to see her in the studio before Julio arrived. She was not singing the words, but just singing the melody with oohs and ahs and all kinds of different noises with her throat and her stomach, because you can sing from with your head, your nose, your stomach, you know, you can take it different places of your body. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And then what happened, the song was called All of Me, and Julio was late, and she got a little upset. She left the studio, got in the limo, and I ran up Fifth Avenue next to the limo saying, please, Diana, he's going to be here. Please don't leave, you know, and which was kind of a fun thing, but also very nerve-wracking because if she had left, she would never have come back. So she finally stopped the car, and I got in and turned around and went back to the studio. And by the time we got back, Julio was there. And once those two artists got together, they forgot about everything, you know. And that's the way it normally works with these, you know, huge artists. You know, they do things that are very strange, and then they hug each other, and that's it. And they did an incredible job. So that's my story on Diana Ross. Later on, she did one of my songs, which became a hit twice, once on her own, and the second time with a group called Westlife. She did a duet with them. And the song is When You Tell Me That You Love Me, which I think is one of my better songs. And yeah, I'm very proud of it. And all these songs we're mentioning here, I will be doing on stage in my show. So people will be hearing five decades of hits.
Yeah, it actually leads me to my final question. Can we talk a little bit about the upcoming shows that you're going to be doing here in South Africa? What are kind of the details of the show? And talk a little bit more about the kind of songs and the kinds of things you're going to be seeing.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing songs from my first two albums, the It Never Rains in Southern California and the Free Electric Band album. I might throw in a song or two from the Your World and My World album. I will be doing songs like, you know, When I Need You. I'll be doing songs like Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now, Starship, or Don't Turn Around. That was also a hit a couple of times, once by Oswald, another time by Neil Diamond, and another time by Ace of Base, which was really the one that really hit it big because it sold like 14 million copies, you know. I will be doing One Moment in Time, When You Tell Me That You Love Me, to all the girls I've loved before. Just many, many songs from the 5 or 6 decades that I've been having success, you know. So for 55 years, I've been doing that, you know, successfully from the very beginning, which was my first hit in 1968, a song called Little Arrows by Lee Peely. And then I had, I don't know, like 10 more hits in the 60s with people like the Pipkins and the Fortunes and Joe Dolan and Blue Mink. And yeah, it's going to be wonderful. I mean, I'm excited because I'm in this cold weather in Europe right now, and I'm going also to South Africa where it's summer.
Oh,
so
yes.
That's exciting also. And also, you know, I love the people there. I love Cape Town. You know, it's just such a beautiful place, you know. And it's very different to 1974. You know, in 1974, there was no television. There was nothing. I mean, it was like sad to see at times, you know. But now it's just so much nicer, you know, and so much part of the rest of the world. And so many people from the rest of the world have gone there to live because it's such a beautiful place, you know. So I'm really looking forward to this. So everybody, buy the tickets. It's really worth it. We'll have fun together.
Awesome.
Thank you. Lots of love to everybody.
Thank you so much for the interview, Albert. I truly appreciate it. And then just for the listeners' information, you're going to be performing on the 3rd and 4th of March at the Spear Amphitheatre in Stellenbosch, the 6th of March at the Feather Market Hall in Port Elizabeth, the 8th of March at Kopanang Koffiekerk at Bloemfontein, and then the 10th of March at the Sun Arena Times Square in Pretoria. So if you want to get your tickets, all you got to do is go to CompuTicket.com, check out Albert Hammond. This is GSA Radio, where you're family. I'm Ethan chatting to Albert Hammond about his upcoming tour.